And just like Moses parted the Red Sea, that's exactly what happened when the pythons started heading for the river.
Sugar is sweet and so is honey. Macho madness is on a roll and it can't be stopped. No, Elizabeth understands what I'm talking about, yeah.
I'm a little problem, baby. I am the original legend killer, Bubba.
Because I proved that I could do it. I paid this man, and he delivered. That's right. The title should be right here, and all you people know that. And you know it too, Hogan.
We've been hanging and banging, brother. And we also been riding our Harley Davidsons through a lot of heavy traffic, dude.
It's the Mac Attack with Ryan Big Mac McKinnell on 920 The Game.
I am the cold-blooded sausage maker.
Yeah, let's go Las Vegas here on this Tuesday. Welcome into the Mac Attack. I'm Brian McKinnell, got Chris Chapman across the way. Got a fun show for you lined up over here the next hour. Obviously, we're about 24 hours away from the start of Season 3 for your Vegas Golden Knights. Exciting times, obviously. So to help start the celebrations, get things kicked in the right gear, right? We got Pete Jensen from the NHL Network. It's been a while we talked to since... if I could speak. It's been a while since we talked to old Pete. He's been on the show all throughout last season and giving us those player updates. He is a fantasy expert. He is the fantasy editor over there at NHL.com. He is a numbers guy. So I don't think I need to tell you how important numbers are in hockey, and especially for this Vegas Golden Knights team, who Chapman last year didn't have a lot of point guys. They weren't blowing anyone off the ice in terms of actual point totals. So we'll take a deep dive with Pete coming up here in about a half an hour. But we got to start the show a bit on a somber note. I think it's kind of an inevitability in this city on a day like this. The reality of the situation is it is October 1st, and this is the second anniversary of the tragic shooting of October 1st, 2017, when 58 people lost their lives just a few miles down the road from this very studio in Magnum. I think it's, we kind of talked about it before the show. It's kind of a reality of the world that we live in and the city that we live in. It's an undeniable fact. It's everyone waking up this morning across the valley. And that's it's something we have to deal with, right? It is an uncomfortable reality, but at the same time, and I kind of talked about this to start. I was on the morning show today on the press box over at ESPN Las Vegas. I think for as uncomfortable it is and for as unfortunate as the reality is, I think dialogue and discussion and conversation is the best way to heal.
Yeah, I mean, it was obviously, for those of us who were here and lived it, it was, I think, a night that none of us will ever forget. We will remember exactly what we were doing. You know, it's like when 9/11 happened, everyone said, oh, well, you'll always remember. For Las Vegas, this was our Pearl Harbor,
yeah.
Right? Like, this is that day that we will always remember. I mean, I remember every single thing I did that night. I remember everything I did the remainder of the night as soon as I found out what was going on. And, you know, from the tragedy, what I remember is the reaction of people in this city the very next day when there were lines around the corner at the blood donation centers.
For a city that didn't have a community, right?
Yes,
that didn't have a culture, right? Right.
You know, and that's what I remember. The food drives, or not the food drives, but the donations that people set up to help the victims. The fact that there were people who didn't have the ability to pay for their bills, and people were stepping up and covering those hospital bills.
Yeah.
You know, and the TV news reporters and guys like Adam Hill who were down there. I remember following Adam on Twitter that night. I mean, he was down on Las Vegas Boulevard giving updates. And
how about the Uber drivers and the Lyft drivers?
Yeah, stepping up and taking people to hospitals. Yeah. People in
citizens
just in the back of pickup trucks taking people to hospitals. And you know, I remember watching a lot of the news, and I couldn't sleep that night because I couldn't believe what had happened. It was surreal. And I remember seeing guys who do sports. They were outside UMC giving updates. There's more ambulances pulling up, people coming out. I mean, we were at a hockey game joking around and having fun and getting ready for the start of the preseason or the regular season, first ever season of the Golden Knights. It was only a couple days away.
Yeah.
I was on the strip an hour before it happened, and I was in line at In-N-Out Burger getting I was in my car, yeah. And I got a text message. Are you on the strip? No, I just left. Why? Something bad is going on.
Yeah, I think it was like that for a lot of people.
Yeah,
right.
My ex-wife works for Metro.
Yeah,
her brother works for Metro. So I didn't get to talk to her that night, but she messaged me early the next morning, and it was basically like, "I know you were down there. I hope you're okay." And that was it, you know. And I texted her, and she said, you know. It was because she worked overnights.
Well, yeah.
So she was working that night.
Well, and everybody. I mean, if you were a first responder, if you were Metro, everyone had to come together at that time. I mean, you're right. Obviously, she was already scheduled to work.
Yeah.
But that really ushered in a week of people, you know, no sleep, volunteering. It really, as you said, it really brought the community together. And I think it's for a lot of people, something they could hang their hat on. In terms of pride, because as I kind of referenced when you started that, is that yeah, this was a city that was accused of not having a culture or not having that identity, and the way Vegas rallied around their city, the way we rallied around this city, the way you know people came from out of state to rally around. I mean, it became an American problem because let's not forget
the guy who brought the crosses from. I think he was from where, Illinois.
Yeah, and let's not forget 58 people passed away. That is an American tragedy.
Yeah,
I mean, it's not just a loss. It is the biggest shooting.
From
right,
all over the country. I mean, I know there were people from Tennessee, California, Wyoming. I think.
Yeah,
I mean, it was. You're right.
Yeah,
it truly was an American tragedy because this was an event that. It had some of the biggest names in country music. I know Jason Aldean was the guy who was playing at the time. And, I mean, he is a international country superstar.
Well, I'll give you an idea. Would he talk about the way the reach of it, right? The way the scope of it. I was similar to you. I was down at the game on that Sunday night. I was on the strip when it happened. I was just leaving, so I saw the ambulance and the cars coming in. But I wasn't affected. There are a lot of people out there listening right now. They were affected, right, in many different ways. I was very fortunate to not know anyone that was out there close. I mean, you heard stories. But actually, the people that the people that were tied closest to the shooting, believe it or not, a couple people. One was a friend in Alaska whose best friend, who I had met and been with her wedding, was shot. And she was in the hospital. They were from Alaska.
Wow.
So the other was a friend that I had known back in Pennsylvania who had another close friend that I had met that was here as well. So the fact that I didn't know anyone from Vegas that was tied to the shooting, but the fact that the closest I was actually from people from Pennsylvania and Alaska, that's incredible.
Well, and that's the crazy thing because unlike El Paso or Columbus or you know, Parkland.
Orlando. Sadly, you can just keep listing off cities.
A lot of these people that were affected directly in this shooting, very few of them were from Las Vegas. Yeah. I mean, I remember there was a really young kid, maybe like 20, 21. I know he went to basic high school. He was from Henderson.
Yep.
I remember seeing his story. And, you know, almost, it wasn't planned, but I was driving on West Cliff the other day up in the northern part of the city, right south of the 95, between Rainbow and Buffalo, and I had never seen it before, and I very ever go down that road. Rarely do I drive down West Cliff, but I was trying to avoid traffic. And on one of the walls, there is a mural painted that has the names and the ages of all the people who tragically lost their life that night and in the days after. And I was stopped at a stoplight, and I was overwhelmed by emotion. Like I literally just put my hand in my head or my head in my hands and I had to wipe away tears because it's still so real and these are real people and it's such a hard thing. I don't know if I'll ever get over it.
I don't think you should.
I just exactly.
I think it's one of those things that you should live with you and you should remember it and what got us to that point.
You will carry it everywhere you go.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. And you said that you were surprised. I gotta be honest. Sadly, and I talked about this on the press box. I wasn't because I was a freshman when Columbine happened. I was 1999. For the last 20 years, obviously this was 2017, so 18 years. It feels like it's been tragedy after tragedy after tragedy. And yes, this one hit home.
Yeah.
But it, for me, it was always, well, it's inevitably going to happen. And This isn't a political talk. It's nothing like that. This isn't – I'm not trying to make this political. It's just a reality of living in America in 2019, and at some point, right, we have to get better. And I don't know necessarily what that road is yet. I don't know if there's a perfect answer, but I do know that conversation – intact and basic human decency can go a long way. So yeah, it is important to remember these incidents. It is important, as you said, Magnum, to let these things live with you. I mean, you get right with it. You don't let it you try not to let it traumatize you in that way. You live for the people that can't live their lives, right? You remember the moments, you take them with you, and you try to get better, right? Out of it, out of the chaos, you try to get better. And I think that is something that Vegas really showed, not just in the weeks and days after October 1st, but 2 years after.
Yeah, I mean, we had an outpouring of love in this city. It didn't matter if you were from the east side or the west side or from Green Valley or from Summerlin or from Centennial Hills. I mean,
or if you just moved here 3 years ago, yeah, or you've lived here your whole life.
We were all Las Vegans that day, and we all had a certain – I don't want to say we had pride, because, no, obviously it wasn't pride, but we had something in us that made us all come together as Las Vegans.
No, I definitely think there was pride there.
And you know, it's just one of those things where you always had in the thought, because it was Las Vegas, that something like this happened. And my initial thought was right after Paris, right, when there was the Eagles of Death Metal. They had that concert in Paris, and these terrorists came in, and that was always what I thought would happen, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was pretty similar. And if you listen, and I remember listening to the police scanner that night, and now you can't listen to the police scanner.
I know.
That's what it sounded like when you heard all these reports. There's people down at New York, New York. There's a bomb. The bomb squad is on their way to Luxor. It's in a car. Mm-hmm. All these misrepresentations and misreports of what was going on. People, you know, you're hearing echoes and people think it's an explosion. Right away, I said, oh, my God, this is Paris. This is what happened in Paris. And it turned out it wasn't, but it was eerily similar to what took place there.
And yeah, and it
really hits you. And it's just you always thought that, yeah, there was a chance it could happen here just because it was Las Vegas. And, you know, we see they've taken precautions, and with I don't know what they call them, those big pylons now that they put up on all up and down Las Vegas Boulevard.
Yep.
Because if you remember, just a couple of years ago, there was a woman who drove up on the street. I believe it was at Flamingo and the Strip, and she ran over a bunch of people in front of Bally's.
Yep.
So, I mean, we've always taken precautions, but with something like that, it was just so improbable that that's how it would happen. Someone doing something the way this guy did, it's just... I don't know, man. You're right. We have to, at some point, we have to have conversation. And
that's the only way you get progress, is through conversation.
If you
bury it, if you keep it inside, if you live with the pain and you don't talk about what has got us to that pain and what caused the pain, it just keeps happening. The vicious cycle just keeps repeating itself.
There's
and Paris
so much,
happens, and Orlando happens, and Columbus happens, and El Paso happens.
There's
and
so they much all just keep hate. Happening.
Yeah.
And it's not just an American problem.
No.
I mean, it is, on
a percentage basis, it's definitely we're leading the way, but you're absolutely correct.
I mean, it takes place all over the world.
Yep.
I mean, I lived in Asia. There was hate there.
Yep.
I mean, even countries that you wouldn't expect, they hate each other. They dislike each other for whatever reason. And it's like, wow, where did this come from?
Yep. It is an undeniable reality, and that is, you know, it's an unfortunate part, but I am proud of this city. You know, 2 years removed, it's still something that we address and we talk about and we share the pain.
And we should talk about
absolutely,
it.
Absolutely. We absolutely should, because and even people who are new to this city, I think they understand. I don't think it takes too long to get a quick understanding of what that meant. And again, I will say that is an American issue. It was an American tragedy, because let's not forget the video footage and the audio. And I know I'm not trying to, like, you know, bring that back up, but I mean, that was played for days on CNN, on Fox News, on NBC, on all the major news outlets.
You had guys like Anderson Cooper and Sean Hannity doing their show from the parking lot behind the Tropicana.
But the videos from that night and the sounds, I mean, it was...
You'll never forget it.
Well, right, but it was put on display in a way that no other tragedy had before, so I feel like America lived with this tragedy. And you brought up 9/11, very similar to that, because it was so visual and it was so auditory, very similar to 9/11.
Yeah,
I mean,
we
it's so much.
We don't have the very few video from the Walmart in El Paso, right? We know what happened, but we can't visualize it the way we can 9/11, where there was just we have the vision of that plane crashing into the building.
Yep.
Unfortunately, the people jumping out of the building. Yep. We have that memory,
and it's the same thing with the first, with the audio and the visual of those sounds, and that again, I think that's why it is another reason why it was such an American issue, and for people that do come to this city and that maybe had just moved here, it's not hard for them to imagine because we all kind of lived it, and we're living it 2 years later, and it's like you said, it doesn't leave you Magnum, and it probably shouldn't. It's a part of what makes us who we are. It's a part of what makes us American, and it's a part also, as we talk about America, it's these type of things that I think, and it's going to sound weird, I think we should be proud of, because we hopefully... We're not there yet. We're definitely not there yet. We have a lot of work to do, but hopefully we get on the other side of this. Hopefully we're the generation that puts a plug in this on some level. It's like it's not going to happen right away, but to be able to theoretically, right, if this all works out, glass half full, and we're better off for this, we will have went through this. We will have persevered through one of the more chaotic and terrible times in American history, and as a city.
Well, it just seems like it's getting worse, which is the horrible part. Like you would hope that at some point enough is enough, right?
Yeah, you would hope.
But unfortunately, it doesn't seem to be. But again,
Magnum, conversation.
Yeah.
Dialogue.
Yeah, we can't be afraid of those things.
Right, exactly. And that's my point. So
you know, we've always this nation has always found a way to persevere and you know, like I was a history minor in college, so I learned all about the great compromises that we've had in this nation.
Mm-hmm.
And for whatever reason, we can't seem to find a way to end this cycle of senseless violence and tragedy. And you know, it's not a political thing; it's an American thing.
Right.
It's not about what side you're on. We're all on the same team here.
100%. 100%. We are definitely all on the team here in Las Vegas. We're thinking about you today, Las Vegas. It's an undeniable reality. But hey, with that in mind, let's turn the page. As very much as we did 2 years ago, what was one of the predominant factors to our healing, to bringing this community together? Vegas Golden Knights. Let's go.
It's the opening round.
Finish him.
Brought to you by VIP Collision.
And that can't be understated as we talk about the Vegas Golden Knights, you know, what they did, the way they ingratiated themselves to this city and the way they went out of their way to help this city will always be remembered. Speaking of the Vegas Golden Knights, obviously, Magnum, the season kicks off here in 24 hours against the San Jose Sharks. But the San Jose Sharks are going to be absent one very key piece.
Yeah, Evander Kane suspended 3 games this morning by the NHL, and you know, I had a feeling he was going to be suspended, but by rule it was supposed to be 10 games. I didn't feel it was worthy of 10 games.
No, I'm actually, thank God they didn't give him 10 games, because I just think that would have set a weak-ass precedent.
Yeah, exactly. And
it's just like, you know.
You know, yeah, he instigated the issue with the ref. The ref responded, and he responded to the ref.
Yep.
3 games is fine. That's kind of what I was thinking, but he will miss the first 2 games against the Golden Knights.
Yes, he will.
Because obviously Friday night, right, they are. But I saw an interesting statistic about Evander Kane. Since he became a member of the San Jose Sharks, his record in Vegas, he's played 10 games, 2-7-1, 0 goals, 103 penalty minutes, and 2 suspensions. Now, I'm assuming that obviously includes preseason, but that's not that.
What if it didn't?
Like, remember Pedro Martinez talking about the Yankees? They're my daddy. Guess what, Evander Kane?
Yeah.
The Golden Knights at T-Mobile Arena are your daddy.
Yeah. Well, you're not going to be seeing T-Mobile Arena anytime soon, there, Evander. 3 games. I think it's right about where it should have been. Now, I was listening to Cofield yesterday, and Adam and Cofield, they kind of said that. I don't know. Listen, I get it. In Vegas, there's a lot of homers that you can't reason with them. You know, you can't. I get it. It's their team. You know what I mean?
It's like that everywhere.
Yeah,
though.
Exactly. It's not reserved just for Vegas. I want to say that, right? But there were folks that want to make Evander Kane out to be the devil. He's not the devil, but he definitely, listen, They essentially what they were saying was the ref got what he deserved, that he went after him. The ref tackled Evander Kane. Now, listen, I don't think the ref tackled Evander Kane. No. I think he lost his balance, right? And he brought Kane down with him. That is up to Kane not to come back and push a referee. Like, you got to...
The reality is the ref probably doesn't react that way if he doesn't get slashed by Kane.
Right, and you can't... I mean, they essentially said the whole crux of the argument was it's ridiculous that the refs can manhandle the players in hockey, but the players can't ever touch the referee.
Well, I don't think the ref manhandled Evander Kane.
I don't either. We talked about this. Hockey is unlike any other sport. It is, yes, it's policed by the players, but the relationship between the player and the referee in hockey is unlike any other sport because they're breaking up fights, they're mm-hmm. getting punched sometimes, they're getting hit in the face with pucks, they're dodging pucks. It's a constant movement. They're a part of the game in
they
a way.
Checked.
They get checked. They're a part of a game. They're a part of the game unlike any other sport. So they have to police it. They have to officiate it differently. So they sometimes do have to grab a dude up. They sometimes do have to take a guy and push him away and touch him. You know what I mean? It is.
Well, you have to control the violence. Right. You know, it's almost like controlled chaos.
Yes, it's exactly what it is. And you have to respect the zebras. You've got to respect the black and white.
And the thing is, as a player, you know that this is something that will happen.
100.
If you
that's
get into
key.
A scrum,
that's the key.
You know, when Dell took down Mark Stone, there was a big scrum in the corner. And who was in the middle of all that?
It's
breaking
always
it up?
The ref.
The ref.
Yeah, getting
the players
punched,
aren't going to break it up.
Getting their face washed, elbowed.
So those guys have a really difficult job, especially with the physical aspect. So I'm not going to criticize any of the referees for doing that part of the game. Yeah, you can criticize the calls they make or whatever, and that's fine. That's human. But you can't knock these guys for getting in the middle of fights. I mean, these are adults. These are some of the best athletes on the planet. Some of these guys, Ryan Reeves is a big guy. You want to get in the middle of him and Evander Kane throwing down?
No, you got to be physical.
Probably not.
No, you got to be physical. And it is up to the professionals to recognize that, hey, the referees are going to be more physical with me. And it's up to, Evander Kane was like, what about abuse of a player? Listen, Evander, you know damn well that ref didn't come in and hog tie you and throw you to the ground. He tripped. His body weight brought him down. You're a professional. You
it's
need
not
to
like
understand
you picked
that.
Him up and
right.
body slammed
right.
him.
Right. He was laying it on pretty thick there. And also, very similar to a Vontaze Burfict, right? Like, why do I get treated differently? Well, Vontaze, well, Evander, right? It's because you're habitual line steppers, you're repeat offenders. There's a track record here. You're not going to get treated the same because time and time again, you've proven that you aren't like other players, right? So that's the reality that Evander Kane's going to have to deal with. And the reality of the San Jose Sharks, no Evander Kane. I don't think it's going to impact. I mean, you went down the stat line there. I don't think it's going to impact the matchup too much.
San Jose will be fine.
Yeah.
They'll be fine without him.
Yep. And hey, maybe they'll be better. Maybe a couple less penalty kills they have to deal with.
Yeah.
You know, we'll follow up a little bit more on the Golden Knights here shortly with Pete Jensen from the NHL Network. I want to pivot, and this is something that I talked about a little bit on the press box today, but I just want to follow it up. And I want to also get your thoughts on it. And that is the firing of Joe Maddon out there in Chicago. And it's not so much a Joe Maddon Chicago issue as it is a reactionary, because we're dealing with this with all of baseball, right? And really with all of sports. You see it with officiating in the NFL and what's a catch and what's not a catch and can I challenge a pass interference or not? And you see it in, you know, baseball with the juice balls. Hey, can we get in more fans? Like, how are we going to get more viewers? They're reacting to the reality of their situation, right? But a lot of these times these reactions are made for the wrong reasons. They're made from the wrong pressures. They're made in haste, if you will. And this firing of Joe Maddon in Chicago has me furious. I'll just say it right off the bat. First of all, I have no dog in the fight with the Chicago Cubs. I'm a White Sox fan. Not that that really should matter, right? But I've seen it with Chicago before, and I've seen it with other sports. But let's just use Chicago as an example. Lovie Smith gets the Chicago Bears to an NFC championship, takes them to a Super Bowl. Bears hadn't been a winning team with any sort of threat, with any sort of identity in years. He came in after, you know, Wanstead and Dick Geron, and he made something special. They fired him on a 10-6 season, essentially saying that we're the Chicago Bears and what we demand better.
Look
okay.
at Marty Schottenheimer, 14-2.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. Like, okay, that's going to get it done, right?
Yeah. So how do you get better from that?
You don't, right? the Chicago Blackhawks, 3 Stanley Cups in the 2010s, 3 of them, yep, all by Joe Quenneville. Prior to that, they hadn't won a Stanley Cup in 60 years. Joe Quenneville arrives on the scene, 3 Stanley Cups, last year he's gone, right? Joe Maddon, 110 years, this team didn't win a World Series. He comes in 2016, he gets you one. Oh, he takes you to the NLCS in his first one. Second year, he wins a World Series, and then the other 2 years, he wins the division. And 3 years removed from a World Series, and you're telling him to kick rocks and making the matter worse? That I've got to hear from Theo Epstein and Joe in these joint press conferences that, oh, you know, we're sharing wine. It was a very friendly separation. I have nothing but the utmost respect for him. Theo Epstein said he was the perfect coach for Chicago at that time.
But he's not now.
Right. 3 years?
Yeah.
That much has changed in 3 years?
He is the best manager that team has had in my lifetime.
100%. And you know what? To make that point even clearer is the fact that he now has multiple suitors lined up,
oh, yeah,
begging him, yep, to come and manage their team. So let me ask you.
He has his choice,
right,
of jobs.
Pretty much.
Don't be shocked if he ends up in Anaheim.
Well, I think that's where he's going to end up.
Unfortunately, me as a Mets fan, I wish the Mets would
sure
make a move.
Well, here's the thing. Everyone wants him.
Yeah.
So what does that tell you, Chicago?
That you're dumb.
Right. You had your man. You had your man. He got your World Series in the place that out of all the cities and out of all the teams and all the sports where you couldn't win a championship, the Cleveland Browns and the Chicago Cubs. Now you go in there in the unwinnable situation and in, I mean, hell, Cleveland's not even fair because they won NFL championships with Jim Brown.
Yeah, but if Freddie Kitchens wins a Super Bowl, he will be a god.
What would you
in Northeastern Ohio?
Gruden get 10 years, 100 million. Oh, give Freddie 20
Freddie
years.
Freddie Kitchens would be owner of the team. Yeah,
exactly.
They give him ownership.
How much percentage would you like?
They would
Freddie
make a mayor of the city. I mean, he would be. He would probably be the governor of Ohio one day.
It's so true. So I just look at this. These franchises, these organizations, man, you're reaping what you sow. You're reaping chaos. You're putting chaos out there, and that's exactly what you're going to sow, right? It is a dangerous game. It is a what have you done for me lately business. Now, I understand that sports in general have very much been that, right? I get that. But we are living a hyper version of that. It's undeniable. It's unfortunate. And I feel for Cubs fans because I promise you, you were the Cubs before Joe Maddon, and you're going to be the Cubs after Joe Maddon. And when I mean when I say that, I think you know what I mean when I say that. It's going to be business as usual, most likely. You had a winner. You let them walk. You got too big for your britches. It is disgusting. These teams need to remember who they are and who brought them to the dance, right? UNLV syndrome. Also, what do you expect? What is expected out of you? We're winners. We're championship. Are you? Are you really? Are you really? Is that really your identity? Patriots, yes. Yankees, yes. They're few and far between. Get it right, Chicago. Boy. Now he's talking about David Ross. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. They certainly have a core there. They've got a ton of talent, and that's part of the reason that Joe Maddon's out, is that he couldn't make the playoffs in back-to-back years with a killer roster, and I get that. But in my eyes, that blame has to fall on the front office. That's your job for mismanaging the bullpen and not going out and getting the right pieces, and the same with the starting pitching. All right, we're going to close the book on baseball because we're going to swing back around. As I mentioned, we are 24 hours away from the kickoff or the puck drop. We've got football and baseball on the mind, right? We are 24 hours away from the start of the NHL season, which means season 3 for your Vegas Golden Knights. And for that, we're going to head across the country. We're going to go out to the East Coast. We're going to be joined by a good buddy of ours here on the Mac Attack. His name is Pete Jensen. He is the senior fantasy editor over at NHL.com. We are going to take a deep dive into the Vegas Golden Knights 2019-2020 season. And we're going to go behind the numbers and see get some predictions from Mr. Pete Jensen as we look ahead to Vegas Golden Knights season 3. This is the Mac Attack. Keep it locked.
It's the Mac Attack with Ryan Big Mac McKinnell on 920 The Game.
All right, in 24 hours, the Vegas Golden Knights kick off season 3 against the San Jose Sharks, minus Evander Kane. And to talk a little numbers, to go behind the action with the Golden Knights in this NHL 2019-2020 season, we head out to the East Coast, join up with our buddy. He is the senior fantasy editor over at NHL.com. He's also the host of the Fantasy on Ice podcast. He is Pete Jensen. What's up, Pete? How you doing?
Doing great. Yeah, we're hours away from the start of the season, believe it or not. So I'm really excited. It's the culmination of a lot of off-season research and fun along the way. And a lot of people are doing their fantasy drafts tonight, so we appreciate everybody following along our coverage.
Absolutely. You go out to NHL.com/fantasy if you're getting down on that. Obviously, here in Vegas, Pete, we have a little bit different interest. Yes, we're interested in fantasy. We're also interested in futures and totals. Obviously, this is a gambling city. We will get into that here in a second, but I just want to ask you, I kind of mentioned it as we just brought you in here. Obviously, the absence of Evander Kane. Obviously, I think you look at this from a fantasy standpoint, which I think can really directly correlate to the question I'm about to ask you is, what are the San Jose Sharks losing when they don't have Evander Kane in what is a kind of an odd pairing of a Wednesday-Friday back-to-back matchups in the Pacific Division between two rivals, the Sharks and the Knights?
Yeah, this is as good as it gets to start a season, especially with how things ended last year. There's going to be a lot of bad blood, a lot of grit in both sides. I think a lot more from Vegas, considering Evander Kane isn't going to be able to help the Sharks try to neutralize that type of play. I expect the Golden Knights to come out firing here. They have a lot to prove, a lot on their mind, unfinished business. And Evander Kane is just one of those physical players who has a high shot volume on a game-to-game basis, gets attempts on net. Last year in the postseason, he really wasn't scoring to his capability, so maybe a little bit of a bounce back ahead this season, but not the way that he wanted to start things off here. And the Sharks overall come in with a much, much weaker top nine forward group compared to the Golden Knights and even compared to themselves last season. No more Nyquist, no more Pavelski. Kane's suspended for 3 games here. I mean, this is a problem here, at least in the early going for the Sharks.
Sure, sure. When you look at the 3 games, was that number right about, was that in your sweet spot? Is that, you think, what the punishment should have been?
I mean, it was tough. I mean, he kind of, there were the antics going on. Every time they play each other, there's antics going on between him and Reeves and the different benches and stuff. I mean, clearly there was some contact from the official on Kane and vice versa. So it's just, you know, not something you'd like to see. I think it's 3 games. I think the damage is done for the Sharks.
All right, so you talk about this Sharks being team being a different team than last year, of course, an unfortunate reality for San Jose Sharks fans. For Vegas fans, I would imagine they're pretty happy, and I would imagine if Vegas fans go out to your Twitter there, Pete, at NHL Jensen, and see your picks for the division winners this year, they will also be happy because you have the Vegas Golden Knights finishing first.
I do, and I mean, there are a couple of teams that could win the Cup this year. I think Dallas and Vegas are my favorites in the West. I mean, if you want to say that the Vegas Golden Knights might have a little bit easier road, that's fair. I think that the Central is a lot more competitive from top to bottom. Almost any team in that Central Division could make a strong case to come out of that this season with a playoff berth, including the Wild, including the Blackhawks.
Yeah.
So the Vegas Golden Knights have a chance here to run away with the division, but they're still going to have to run into the Sharks in the playoffs, so it's not going to be easy. I mean, that's a coin flip anytime they play each other. And then I think Dallas, with how far they got last year, a bounce away, really a wraparound missed goal by Jamie Benn away from beating the St. Louis Blues, and who knows how far they could have gone. Yeah. They added Joe Pavelski. So I really like Dallas a lot. I have them coming out of the West, but it's a two-man race between Vegas and Dallas for me out West. I'm a believer in Colorado to make the playoffs, but I'm not as high on them as other people are.
Yeah, I'm one of those people that's pretty high on Colorado, but we'll leave that alone because I say that because one name that you kind of left out, which I'm curious about, the Calgary Flames. No love for Calgary?
I just don't really trust their goaltending. And if you look at the NHL in the modern salary cap, division realignment era, there are always 4 or 5 teams that come out after being in the previous year. And Calgary is just a team that, I mean, they're an injury away. I mean, one injury could really derail their top 6. It was good that they got Matthew Tkachuk signed. They're a physical team with a high-powered offense. I just don't trust their goaltending. And then Mark Giordano is another year older. I believe he's 36. And if the goaltending is suspect, it's all going to be on his shoulders. I know he dropped 70-plus points last year, but he's an older guy, bound for some regression. And if it's too much on his shoulders, I just feel like it could set back the whole offense. So I mean, that's probably the one team, though. Like, I left out Winnipeg, who has a boatload of problems. I left out Pittsburgh, who's very top-heavy, can't really afford an injury. But Calgary is probably the safest team to make it that I left out. And let's be honest, you just run out of room no matter who you pick. There are teams you want to pick and put in who've missed it from the previous year. Right. But you just run out of room because the league is so darn competitive.
Now we're here with Pete Jensen. He is the fantasy hockey editor over at NHL.com. He's also the host of the Fantasy on Ice podcast. You can find him on Twitter at NHL Jensen. All right, let's get into, because Pete, listen, we're in Vegas, right? Betting is huge out here. It's not just fantasy, but we got future bets. We got season bets. We got all sorts of exciting stuff to get to. So we're going to head out to our buddies at the Superbook at the Westgate because they got some pretty interesting lines in terms of future betting. And you are the numbers guy. You are the fantasy guy. So there, in my opinion, there is no one better to ask and to get this information from than you, Pete Jensen. So we're going to start with Mark Stone. The number is 31.5 goals on the season. Is he going over or under?
I think he goes over. I mean, I just think with the Vegas Golden Knights right now, if he's playing with Stastny and Pacioretty, he's a near lock to get over. And even if an injury happens to one or both of Vegas's centers, like last year Stastny was banged up a little bit at the beginning, this Cody Glass kid has a big opportunity here to make an impact, either as a third-line center, chipping in some offense, and then getting elevated when he has an opportunity knocking. So I'm really high on Mark Stone. He's one of my top 10 fantasy right wings, and I would say I would lean over for that one. I'm just pretty high on that Vegas top line.
All right, well, let's stick with his line mate then, because this is a guy who, I don't know, expectations should be high considering what Vegas gave up to get him. He is a young-ish, I mean, he's getting older, obviously, but I'd still say he's young-ish. He's still, you know, I'd still think potentially his best days are ahead of him, but that's what I'm going to ask you. Max Pacioretty, 27.5 goals heading into 2019. What do you think, over or under?
It's kind of a collective argument that I'm making for that top line. I mean, I think that Stastny could produce to a level that he did earlier in his career that we haven't seen for the better part of the past decade. Same goes for Stone, could have his best season yet. And Max Pacioretty, I mean, what this guy has done in the preseason and then also last postseason, among the league leaders in points in both stanzas we're talking about. So he's been hot for a while. I think he goes over because he has never played for a full season with a center the caliber of Paul Stastny. It's just a fact. He never played with a center of that caliber when he was at the Montreal Canadiens, not even close. So what that guy could do over a full season, I've been preaching Pacioretty as a bargain, and I like him to hit 30-plus goals. So, yeah, it kind of goes hand-in-hand with Stone, but they're playing on the same line, mind you.
I like it. I like it. All right, let's go out to the other top line of the Vegas Golden Knights, and let's talk about a guy who, well, he's got a new contract, and his season one in Vegas was incredible. Obviously, I'm talking about Wild Bill William Karlsson, 40-goal scorer. Little bit of a regression last year. This year, the number is set at 24.5 goals, Pete Jensen. What do you think about William Karlsson? Is it going to be more like season one, more like season two? Does he go under or over 24.5?
I would lean towards over, but he's a polarizing guy. I mean, he's, you know, only 26 years old. He's got a world of potential in front of him. Went from 43 to 24. That's a staggering dip. I mean, we don't have anything else to compare it to over the past 2 years. So, I mean, he's really been fantasy relevant the past 2 years alone since he joined Vegas. Everything else was just a cup of coffee in this league. So from 23.4% to 14%, say Karlsson shoots about 15-16%, he should get over that number. Expect a little bit of a bounce back at the very least from Karlsson. I know I'm going over on each of the three so far, but there's a lot of offensive capability. I think that, like I said, other than Dallas, I mean, Vegas probably still has the deepest offense in the Western Conference. I don't think anybody could argue against that.
All right, I like it. Well, here's maybe one that'll force you going under, but I don't know. I don't know. I don't know where you're at with this guy. I'm talking about the netminder. I'm talking about Flower. I'm talking about Marc-Andre Fleury. His line for total wins this season is set at 31.5. I mean, age is a concern, right? Regression is always a concern. What's your level of concern when you look at Marc-Andre Fleury at 31.5, over or under?
So everybody should check out. We have a cool article on NHL.com/fantasy, our goalie team win projections for the new season.
Yeah.
And we kind of project the standings in terms of wins. You know, there are some opportunities for teams to gain points in overtime and shootout losses. But we have Vasilevsky, Bobrovsky, Anderson, and Fleury as the top four. We have Fleury for 36. This is a combined projection from me, Rob Reese, and Dave Satriano. All of us you can hear on the NHL Fantasy on Ice podcast. And yeah, Fleury, 36 wins is very attainable. When he has no strong backup behind him, let's be honest. So he's a guy that Vegas might try to get rest when they can, but he is the sure number one starter, no dispute there. He's going to play 60-plus games if healthy, and he's going to win 35-plus without a shadow of a doubt.
Oh, without a I like that authority. You know, that Pete, that has me running for the betting window. You got a lot of money out here riding on you, buddy. I'm sure you're used to that, though. You're the NHL fantasy editor over there. You know what it's like to put it out there and put it all on the line, right?
For sure. I mean, we're actually diving into a lot of gambling in our podcast, like some over-unders. We got a good episode out there. We're tapping into some good minds around the hockey world.
Awesome.
Fantasy advice, DFS, also, you know, season-long leagues, and then, of course, the gambling window, which is evolving. And we're happy to answer anybody's questions at NHL Fantasy and touch on some of these topics in the podcast.
No, I love it. All right, Pete, we're going to end on this. What do you think the biggest hurdle for the Vegas Golden Knights heading into season three is going to be? What do they need to get right with to make a deep run into this 2019-2020 playoff season?
Well, clearly, based on my projections, I'm not worried about the offense, and I'm not worried about Fleury. I'm worried a little bit about the defense.
Yeah, yeah.
There are a lot of teams out there that have like a strong top three, which the Golden Knights do. Then maybe the bottom three has some questions. Interested to see what like a Jimmy Schultz could do. I think the third line center is Glass's job for the taking here. But and that's nice to be able to integrate some youth, by the way. That's important for the ongoing building of the franchise to not just be locked in with your top six. That was like what happened with Minnesota for many years. Their competitive team made the playoffs, but they were locked into that top six. Their development went astray. And then a couple of years down the line, now they're not even a playoff team anymore. So that's a big thing for Vegas. But, yeah, Shea Theodore, I expect to take a big step forward. But the loss of Colin Miller worries me a little bit, especially when you get to playoff time with him traded to the Sabres. So just something to keep an eye on there, the ongoing development of the bottom three defensemen for the Golden Knights.
All right, Pete. That is Pete Jensen. You can follow him on Twitter at NHL Jensen. Buddy, it was good catching up with you. Hockey season is upon us. This will not be the last time we chat with each other. I'll catch up with you down the road, all right?
I'm excited, man. Thanks again for having me on. And, yeah, to say I've been looking forward to that Golden Knights Sharks game all summer long. So let's go, baby.
There you go. I agree. Let's go, baby. Pete Jensen, NHL.com fantasy editor and also the host of the NHL Fantasy on Ice podcast. Make sure you go out there, check that out, and go follow him on Twitter at NHL Jensen. All right, we will put a plug on it. We'll be back right after this. Get you primed and ready for VGK San Jose going down in 24 hours.
The Mac Attack returns. You're listening to the Mac Attack.
All right. Now, listen, I know I said that I was going to have Jen Sturger on today. We actually had to push her back. We're going to be joined by Jen hopefully tomorrow. I do want to get her thoughts. Listen, tomorrow is going to be hockey heavy. Obviously, we're starting season three. I'm going to try to stack the show with some Golden Knights guests, get you all ready for the Sharks and the Knights going down at 7:30 tomorrow with T-Mobile. But I do also want to talk to Jen about pretty big moment in professional wrestling that's happening tomorrow. Over there on TNT, AEW All Elite Wrestling is debuting their new show. It's going to be theoretically direct competition for the World Wrestling Entertainment, Vince McMahon's company, the WWE. It's been a long time since that company had some actual competition. And as we know, Magnum, competition is a good thing.
Yeah, wrestling needs it, I think.
100%. It's been very stale for a very long time.
Yes,
and,
it has.
There's a lot of people out there that want the real wrestling. They want to see the in-ring action and not the drama and the soap opera stuff outside the squared circle. A little bit of a throwback to the 80s. And why? It's not surprising. Cody Rhodes, the son of Dusty Rhodes, is the one of the lead motivators out there at AEW. So I would like to talk to Jen a little bit about that. So hopefully we'll catch up with her tomorrow. But listen, tomorrow's going to be all VGK in San Jose outside of that. I can't believe it, man. I can't believe we're season three, Magnum. And the Sharks and the Knights are leading the night game in terms of rivalry and opening the season. What a wild time to be a sports fan in Las Vegas. We will be here with you, open hearts, open arms, to chat sports every single day. This is the Mac Attack. We'll see you in 24 hours, friends.